This is Election 2014, a statewide news special on the Pennsylvania primary election. I'm Dave Davies, senior reporter at WHYY Public Radio in Philadelphia.
I think the primary elections are just as important as any election because you're basically putting together a ballot that everyone will see on that big day when the election finally occurs.
With Tuesday's primary nearly here, we'll look at the key races, from governor to the Pennsylvania legislature and Congress. This election season has been full of attack ads and verbal jabs.
Once you stab your opponent in the neck and they bleed to death, you don't keep stabbing them.
And newcomers trying to break into the political process.
I would point out that Congress is full of career politicians, and I don't think they seem to be getting a whole lot done these days.
Plus the issues that matter to you. Where do the Democratic candidates trying to unseat Governor Tom Corbett stand? Coming up on Election 2014. First the news. I'm Dave Davies, and this is Election 2014, a statewide news special. Over this next hour, we'll be covering the Pennsylvania governor's race, from the Democratic candidates running in Tuesday's primary to big issues, including education and natural gas drilling, and what to expect when the winner takes on incumbent Republican Tom Corbett. We'll also check in on other key primary races, from a hotly contested congressional race to the Pennsylvania legislature, where a maverick Republican is shaking things up in the state capitol. First, the Pennsylvania governor's race. Incumbent Tom Corbett is unopposed in the primary after the Republican Party bumped his conservative challenger, Bob Guzzardi, off the ballot with a court challenge. But there's a free-for-all on the Democratic side. A once crowded and collegial field has narrowed to four candidates, and two are throwing some hard punches.
Why would he chair the campaign of a man arrested for his role in a race riot?
It's how Tom Wolf did business, and it can't be trusted.
So who are these candidates?
I'm Rob McCord.
I'm Allison Schwartz.
I'm Katie McGinty.
Hi, I'm Tom Wolf. I'm a Democrat running for governor.
Let's take a look at what these contenders bring to the contest and how the primary campaign has unfolded. Early on, the Democratic field was crowded, as many as eight candidates at one point. They appeared together often at forums, outdoing one another on issues like education funding.
Succeed. I would invest in preschool and full-day kindergarten and give our kids the best chance they possibly can have.
It's at the core of why I intend to defeat and evict Tom Corbett.
Policy differences among the candidates were subtle. Winning would require drawing distinctions. So when it was time for TV ads, the candidates focused on their personal narratives.
This is where I grew up. 10 kids in the family and one bathroom. Dad was a police officer for 35 years, and my mom worked nights in a restaurant.
I was raised by a single mom right here in Pennsylvania, and those first few years were pretty tough. But my mom never gave up. She was a teacher, and she understood the power of education to change lives.
That was Katie McGinty and Rob McCord. Early on, both touted their impressive resumes. McCord ran venture capital funds before winning the state treasurer's office. McGinty worked in the Clinton administration and later became Ed Rendell's environmental secretary. One candidate who didn't focus on her childhood was Congresswoman Allison Schwartz. From the beginning, her message was that from the state Senate to Congress, she wasn't just an advocate for progressive ideas, she got things done.
One of the first pieces of legislation I worked on, you know it as CHIP. I pushed hard, and we got it done.
But the most effective of the bio ads came from the least known candidate, York businessman Tom Wolf.
I was born and raised in central Pennsylvania.
Dad joined the Peace Corps and served for 2 years in India.
And then he went to MIT, where he earned a PhD.
Wolf's beautifully produced ads used his family to present his story. A homegrown Pennsylvanian who did interesting things, rescued his family business and treated employees fairly, and served as Governor Rendell's revenue secretary. As good as they were, the money behind the ads was more vital. Wolf put $10 million of his own into the race, so he got on the air first, and for weeks, voters saw his commercials and nobody else's, giving Wolf a commanding lead. As the race matured, to change the dynamics, the others had to attack. Recently, McCord seized on the hot-button issue of race.
Why would he chair the campaign of a man arrested for his role in a race riot, one that left a black woman dead?
The charges involve Wolf's former association with a York, Pennsylvania mayor who allegedly played a role in a race riot decades before. Schwartz followed with a hard-hitting ad punching holes in Wolf's image as an effective and socially responsible businessman. The issues in the race became character and leadership, and whether Wolf or one of his rivals has the experience and judgment for the job of governor. Here's what some of McCord, Schwartz, then Wolf had to say at their last debate about whether Wolf acted quickly or publicly enough in 2001 when the York mayor was accused and later acquitted of murder in a race riot decades before.
Good people sometimes make bad leadership decisions. If we had finished the conversation much more overtly and less coyly, we wouldn't have had to run the ad. But we do need a leader who will stand up and fight for people, including seniors, veterans, and public education professors.
You were faced with a chance to speak up publicly. You chose not to. So the question now is, if you were faced with that same question presented to you today, would you do the same thing? Would you choose not to speak up?
Judge me by my life. I stayed in the campaign for the 2 or 3 days it took to get him out of the race. He withdrew from the race and the campaign ended. That was the sum total of my connection with Charlie Robertson. I actually was responsible for getting him out of the race. I'm proud of that. And I'm also very proud of what York has done in terms of bridging the racial divide and the role that I've played in leading York through that chapter.
McGinty stayed out of the fray, saying she'll fight once she's in office for all Pennsylvanians. A Franklin and Marshall poll released Wednesday shows Wolf with a 17 percentage point lead over Schwartz, his nearest rival. But there's an interesting twist as the race comes to a close. Republicans have run a TV ad and several hard-hitting mailings attacking Wolf, and the mailings are going to registered Democrats. Franklin and Marshall political scientist Terry Madonna says this is beyond unusual.
It's virtually without precedent.
Without precedent, Madonna says, for one party in a Pennsylvania gubernatorial race to intervene in the other party's primary.
The only conclusion you can draw is that the governor's campaign wants to pick the candidate to run against the governor in the fall.
It's clear, Madonna says, that Corbett doesn't want to run against Wolf. And for my full interviews with each candidate, head online to newsworks.org. We now turn to how one of the state's major Democratic voter blocs could be critical in Tuesday's gubernatorial primary. And I'm not talking about the vote-rich Philadelphia area. More now from reporter Deanna Garcia at WESA in Pittsburgh.
When it comes to big elections in Pennsylvania, Pittsburgh usually factors in somewhere, especially in the spring of 2010 during the gubernatorial primary, when news outlets reported the results.
This is going to be the first time in a long time that someone from Pittsburgh will have the governor's seat.
And of course, that race ended up with Republican Tom Corbett ultimately defeating Democrat Dan Honorato. Now up for re-election, Corbett, this time, will ultimately face off against a Democrat from the other side of the Alleghenies. And this raises a big question. Just how much sway will southwestern Pennsylvania Democratic voters have in Tuesday's primary? John Delano, the money and politics editor at KDKA Television, seems to think a fair amount.
Because there will be split voting back east. All of these four candidates, three of them come from the Philadelphia area, the fourth comes from the York County area. The rest of the state could be the decider, and the biggest chunk of votes in the Democratic primary outside of southeastern Pennsylvania is right here in Pittsburgh.
Now, Jerry Schuster, a University of Pittsburgh political communications professor, agrees with John Delano that the southwestern Democratic vote will matter. But he thinks the race here is probably already decided.
If you look at any of the polls at this point, Tom Wolf has a rather commanding lead. I know it's the gap is less now than it might have been 3 weeks ago, but still, he has a commanding lead.
Out of the four Democratic candidates, Tom Wolf has outspent his fellow candidates on advertising in the region. He's also picked up the most endorsements from Pittsburgh area organizations and elected officials, including Allegheny County Executive Rich Fitzgerald and Pittsburgh Mayor Bill Peduto. Wolf also has support from labor groups, as well as from federal and state officials. Again, here's KDKA's John Delano.
I think part of the calculus behind Rich Fitzgerald and Bill Peduto and a number of the other leading political Democrats in jumping on Tom Wolf's bandwagon was essentially to make this region Tom Wolf's territory, so that if he were elected governor, they themselves and this area have more clout in Harrisburg.
Before the race was whittled down to four main Democratic contenders, Pittsburgh's Jack Wagner ran briefly before bowing out. Wagner, who is a former state auditor general, says winning in this region has a lot to do with name recognition.
People need to know who you are. They need to know your name, and they need to know something about you, your past, your history, and just not related to government, but also your involvement in the private sector, your involvement with nonprofit corporations. More importantly, they want to be able to believe in you.
Now, not unlike what other analysts have said, Wagner suggests whoever wins here will likely be the Democrat running against Corbett in November's general election. But as far as voter turnout is concerned, Wagner is less confident about what that will look like.
I have a great concern that the voter turnout will not be high as a result of there not being a candidate from Western Pennsylvania and the fact that the public is generally not pleased with government at all levels.
Reporting from WESA in Pittsburgh, I'm Deanna Garcia.
Coming up, just what are the candidates saying about natural gas drilling, education funding, and how to turn around the state's financially distressed communities? We'll spend the next part of the show exploring critical issues the candidates have addressed or failed to. That's after this break on Election 2014. Welcome back to Election 2014, a statewide news special. I'm Dave Davies. Just before the break, we got a feel for who Pennsylvania's Democratic gubernatorial candidates are and what kind of campaigns they're running. Now we're going to hear more about some of the major campaign issues and what the candidates have to say about them. Polls show the top issue for Pennsylvania voters in this year's governor's race is education.
What issues matter to you?
Oh, it's going to be education, because if we're really serious about education, you got to put the money forward. And I think that we're at a crossroads because you have a lot of young people graduating school and there's a lot of unemployment.
I think education would be at the top of my list. You know, society can't go too far without solid education in place. We have to revisit funding, how we fund our schools to make that more equitable.
I asked WHYY education reporter Kevin McCrory to shed some light on how the Democratic candidates differ on matters of schools and school funding. Kevin, the common impression is that these four Democrats, Rob McCord, Katie McGinty, Allison Schwartz, and Tom Wolf, agree on a lot in education policy, but not everything.
You're right, Dave. So it's probably best to first discuss what they have in common. All want to ramp up early childhood education programs, all want to institute tougher reforms in the charter school sector, and all want a fairer formula for how the state dollars are driven out to schools. Above all, though, they each aim to restore what they call Governor Tom Corbett's billion-dollar education cut.
Now, that point is disputed. Did Governor Corbett really cut $1 billion from education?
Corbett says the public has been misled on the issue, pointing out that the state has never devoted more to education. He says the cuts were a product of the federal stimulus funding that dried up at the end of the Ed Rendell administration. Here's the key distinction. Corbett's math counts dollars budgeted for things like the state's teacher pension system. The candidates, though, point to the decline of actual dollars spent in classrooms, which, yes, between Rendell's last year and Corbett's first, dropped by about $1 billion. Here's Congresswoman Allison Schwartz talking about why she doesn't buy Corbett's stimulus argument.
Tom Corbett decided and found a way to replace federal dollars that were lost for the corrections budget, which went up dramatically. He somehow found the dollars for that. He found the dollars for medical assistance. We might actually be happy about that. But the point is that he found the dollars elsewhere, but he didn't find it for education.
All right, tell us about their early childhood education plans.
all stress the importance of pre-K programs. Schwartz has a Keystone Kids pitch that would give every four-year-old access to quality pre-K. McCord specifically earmarks an additional $220 million a year for early childhood learning.
It's important we don't just do full-day kindergarten, we don't just do universal pre-K, but that we have voluntary, high-quality early childhood learning opportunities.
Okay, Kevin, now the rise of charter schools has been a very contentious issue statewide over the past decade or so. What are the candidates saying about charter schools?
All stress greater oversight and all emphasize the need to reinstitute the line item that reimburses school districts for some of the cost of students who move to charters. The Corbett administration ended this practice, devastating districts like Philadelphia, which have a lot of charter schools. McCord's plan specifically mentions opposing the pending state legislation that would allow colleges and universities to authorize new charter schools. Tom Wolf calls for a moratorium on new cyber charters. He'd create a new office purely dedicated to providing greater charter oversight, and he's the only candidate who's put a dollar figure on the potential savings from existing charter overpayments.
What we have to be against is charter schools that are unaccountable and charter schools that are being funded to the extent of this $300 to $400 million of excess that's leaking out of our public school system.
Now, Kevin, all of the candidates propose generating more revenue by taxing the Marcellus Shale gas drilling. Are there differences among them on that?
Sure. Rob McCord wants a 10% tax on shale drilling, the largest of all the candidates. Schwartz and Tom Wolf call for a 5% drilling tax. Katie McGinty is planning for a 4.5% tax, but McGinty, who aims to reduce class sizes to 25 students, says her drilling plan sets her apart because she devotes all of it to education.
You know, Kevin, when there's a lot of agreement among candidates on policy issues, you often see them trying to distinguish themselves by their biographies, their personal narratives. Do we see this on education, too?
Yeah, we actually are. Schwartz emphasizes that her mother attended a Philly public high school and that her own children attended Philadelphia public schools. After more than a decade in the PA Senate and another decade in the U.S. House of Representatives, Schwartz depicts herself as the only candidate with the experience really to come through on her education promises. McCord receives much of his education in Lower Merion and suburban Philly. He says living through a period of financial uncertainty in childhood gave him a great appreciation for working Pennsylvanians, and he's fond of referring to teachers as hometown heroes, and the state's largest teachers union, PSEA, has endorsed him. McGinty, a graduate of St. Hubert's in Northeast Philly, positions herself as a political outsider from humble roots who knows how to get things done.
I think if voters first and foremost are looking for somebody who comes from a working family and understands that education is the only ticket for people who don't have a trust fund, don't have any other guarantees, then I'm their candidate.
Wolf stresses that both of his daughters thrived in the second poorest school district in York County thanks to the help of hardworking teachers and staff.
These candidates have a lot of ambitious ideas for education. What's the likelihood they can actually make these things happen?
Well, if one of these Democrats is able to defeat the incumbent in the fall, he or she will have to face a Republican-controlled, tax-averse legislature. To make any of these things happen, the new governor would have to win the legislature's support for some sort of tax increase, be it on shale drilling, personal income, or otherwise.
WHYY's education reporter, Kevin McCrory. Kevin, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
The Democratic gubernatorial candidates propose taxing natural gas drilling to generate additional revenue for education. The governor's race has renewed a long-standing debate about whether the state should tax the industry and how much of the state should be open for drilling. A worker in the industry, Ed Valentis, supports Governor Corbett and disagrees with the Democratic nominee's proposals. Here's Valentis in Harrisburg at a recent rally.
You have to have jobs and creation. You need to get something back for what we give. They want to unitarily pull one industry and tax us. They are going to drive us away. They're going to go to Ohio. They're going to go to West Virginia.
For more on where Republican Governor Tom Corbett and the Democratic candidates stand on natural gas drilling, let's turn now to our State Impact Pennsylvania reporters, WITF's Marie Cusick from Harrisburg and Katie Culinary from WHYY here in Philadelphia.
I'm Katie Culinary.
And I'm Marie Cusick.
As we've been following the Democratic candidates and their positions on natural gas, here's one thing we keep hearing over and over again.
We should impose a reasonable severance tax.
I'm proposing a 5% severance tax, I call it.
It's a driller's tax.
I would add a 5% extraction tax.
What the candidates are talking about is how to tax natural gas drilling.
And when I hear them talk about a severance tax, I kind of think of like severance pay when you leave a job.
Well, Marie, it's really not all that different. The idea behind a severance tax is to tax natural resources severed from the earth or leaving the ground.
And it's sometimes called an extraction tax, but the principle is the same. You're taxing drillers based on the amount of gas they produce. And that's not how it works in Pennsylvania right now. Governor Tom Corbett, a Republican, remains opposed to a severance tax on natural gas drilling, whereas all the Democratic candidates in Tuesday's primary are in favor of one.
What my opponents are saying is that they want more money to spend. They're not looking at the growth of the industry, which, as the industry grows, our economy becomes stronger.
What the Democratic candidates don't agree on is how it would work and how big the tax should be. Take Katie McGinty. She wants a 4.5% tax. And then Rob McCord, he's pushing for the highest severance tax at 10%.
And Tom Wolf and Allison Schwartz both support a 5% tax. But Schwartz says she'd also like to keep the current impact fee in place.
We should maintain the impact fee. It's been important to local communities. But I would add a 5% extraction tax because right now, Tom Corbett's giving away that natural gas to the energy companies.
Marie, this is something you've covered a lot. Tell us more about what the impact fee is.
So it's a flat fee that gas companies pay for every hole they punch in the ground, every well that's drilled. In the first year, the fee starts out at the high end. It can range from $40,000 to $60,000 per well. Companies continue to pay it for 15 years, and the amount declines over time. Since it was enacted, it's brought in about $630 million. Much of that money is going back to the communities that are hosting drilling, and Governor Corbett supports having an impact fee.
So could it be called a tax?
Well, that's the big question the Democratic candidates are waging this election season, whether the impact fee on the number of wells is bringing in less money than a severance tax on production would, and whether the industry is getting a break. Here's Rob McCord's take on it.
It'd be as if you owned a house, you wanted to sell the house, you hired a real estate agent, in this case your governor, and said, get me the best price. And instead of getting you the best price, the person said, well, my real job is to get the lowest possible price for the buyer.
Now, interestingly, the state's independent fiscal office recently looked into this issue to see how Pennsylvania compares to other states with severance taxes on natural gas drilling. And they found that Pennsylvania's effective tax rate was among the lowest.
So here we have the Democratic candidates pitching severance tax proposals as a way to raise hundreds of millions of dollars in additional revenue, which would go towards financing environmental protection and education. And polls show that's really important to voters.
Right, but that doesn't mean they want drilling to go everywhere in Pennsylvania, even if it might mean less tax revenue down the road.
Well, for now, the candidates all say they're in favor of keeping a moratorium on new oil and gas leasing in state parks and forests. Let's hear what Tom Wolf has to say about this.
I think we ought to return to the idea that state lands are there to preserve our natural resources, and as such, they ought to be places of refuge, places people can go to see nature in its great beauty.
For sure, drilling on public lands is a really controversial issue. So is the idea of fracking in the Delaware River watershed. So, Katie, break down for us how this issue has been playing out on the campaign trail.
Well, Marie, first off, it's important to know that the governor of Pennsylvania has a key stake in the Delaware River Basin Commission. But at the moment, that commission, which is made up of the four states that share the watershed and the federal government, can't agree about how to regulate drilling there. So right now, there's no drilling allowed. And while Governor Corbett has pushed to allow for drilling, three of the four Democratic candidates support keeping the moratorium. Former State Environmental Protection Secretary Katie McGinty is the only Democratic candidate who's open to future gas drilling in the Delaware River watershed.
We need to start by making the investment in real environmental protection and safety protections out there, and then take it to our counterparts and hold it up for their scrutiny. And I think we can meet the test. We're not meeting the test right now.
And before you head to the polls on Tuesday, you can check out our website for more information about where the candidates and the governor stand on natural gas development. Just log on to stateimpact.npr.org/Pennsylvania, and we'll keep you updated all the way to November's general election.
I'm Katie Colinari.
And I'm Marie Cusick.
As questions remain about the pursuit of natural gas drilling to promote economic growth, many municipalities across the Commonwealth are facing increasing pressure just to pay their bills and stay solvent. During this election season, gubernatorial candidates from both parties have said little about how they would deal with state laws that complicate efforts to address the financial strains on many cities, townships, and boroughs. More now from WITF's Keystone Crossroads reporter Emily Previty.
The city of Shamokin in central Pennsylvania's Northumberland County has had a little trouble paying its bills recently. So the community of about 7,500 people is looking for a way to fix that problem.
This special meeting of the Shamokin City Council now come to order.
Here at a recent Shamokin City Council meeting, residents like Robert Gilligbauer step up to the microphone and voice their concerns.
People are out of money. People can't afford any more tax increases. This town's going to die. You're going into Act 47 now.
Within an hour of Gilligbauer's testimony, the Shamokin City Council votes unanimously to seek state assistance through Act 47. That's the law for state-guided recovery for distressed municipalities in Pennsylvania. It takes decades of population loss and tax-based erosion, on top of ever-rising payroll, pension, and debt obligations, for communities to get into enough trouble that they actually invite state oversight. But it happens often enough that more than 24 municipalities currently are engaged in the Act 47 process or its precursor early intervention program. And experts say many more towns would qualify, but they're not seeking intervention. Including those places, an estimated 40% of Pennsylvanians live in a distressed community. So this election season, it's striking that Democratic candidates for governor have largely ignored this problem. And Pennsylvania political analysts have noticed. They say jobs, economic development, and Medicaid expansion have dominated the dialogue because those are the issues that really matter to voters. Democratic candidate Rob McCord admits he and his opponents have been focusing elsewhere.
Part of a campaign is just finding the cut-through issues that people, when they hear it, they automatically understand what you're talking about.
But when these issues do come up, McCord, along with Democratic candidate Katie McGinty, both mention the state should encourage municipalities to share local services. McGinty, a former state environmental protection secretary, is the only candidate whose platform includes detailed reforms targeting local governance in distressed towns. One of her proposals is to consolidate the state's smallest police forces and local pensions.
They are hugely costly relative to the population they're serving.
But the candidate's proposals don't go far enough for Rick Schutler. He runs the Pennsylvania Municipal League.
That is not going to solve Reading or Allentown's or Altoona's pension problem. The administrative savings that will be reaped from consolidation of PMRS will be gone in 5 years.
By the way, PMRS is the Pennsylvania Municipal Retirement System. Credit ratings agencies have actually threatened to downgrade Pennsylvania's bond status if pension reform doesn't happen soon. For Stephen Goldfield from the Public Resources Advisory Group, these credit agency warnings are just extra pressure to enact reforms that are long overdue. Goldfield is one of the lead consultants behind Harrisburg's debt resolution and recovery plan.
Yeah, people aren't retiring at 55. People aren't even retiring at 65. If somebody retires at age 55 and gets $60,000 a year and they live until they're 80, that's just an enormous amount of money that needs to be set aside.
But for Goldfield, what perhaps matters most to running local government is cooperation. That can be hard to come by, and it's definitely not something any governor can fix. From Harrisburg to Scranton, city officials bicker and sometimes refuse to cooperate with demands made under Act 47. One thing they seem to agree on is this. Act 47 isn't working for their cities, and they don't really have any recourse. It also doesn't help that this election season, Pennsylvania's struggling communities are watching just how little attention is being paid to their challenges. From WITF in Harrisburg, I'm Emily Previty.
Emily Previty's reporting is part of a brand new multimedia initiative called Keystone Crossroads, which will focus on the challenges and opportunities facing Pennsylvania's financially distressed communities. With a 2-year grant from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, Keystone Crossroads is a joint effort of WITF in Harrisburg, WESA in Pittsburgh, WPSU in State College, and WHYY here in Philadelphia. When we come back, we'll check in on other key primary election races, from the contested 13th Congressional District to the Pennsylvania Legislature. Plus, a look ahead at what to expect in the general election campaign this fall, and how the Penn State Jerry Sandusky scandal might affect Governor Tom Corbett's re-election bid. This is Election 2014. Welcome back to Election 2014, a statewide news special. I'm Dave Davies. All 18 of Pennsylvania's congressional seats are on the ballot this year, and while there aren't many contested primaries, I'm following one here in the Philadelphia area that's become a bare-knuckled brawl. It's the battle for the seat Congresswoman Alison Schwartz is leaving to run for governor, where any one of four determined candidates could win. Let's start with Marjorie Margolies, who held the seat for one term 20 years ago. She was considered the frontrunner early on, in part because she has powerful friends.
This is a profoundly important election for people who think like most of us do.
Yep, that's Bill Clinton campaigning for Margolies in April. They're close because back in 1994, she lost her seat after casting a tough budget vote for him, but also because her son Mark is married to Chelsea Clinton. Many thought her name recognition and all that Clinton star power and fundraising would make this a walk for Margolies, but it hasn't been. She dodged early debates and managed her campaign fund poorly, and she has three formidable opponents. One is State Representative Brendan Boyle, who recently concluded a debate by referring to his father, Frank, a custodian who sweeps train platforms.
This race is not about Bill Clinton. It's about Frank Boyle. And it's about the millions of others like him that need a champion in Washington, D.C.
Boyle is the only Philadelphian in this race, in a district roughly split between city and suburbs, and his ads cast him as a row house populist.
My dad's a janitor for SEPTA. My wife's a public school teacher. We're not millionaires, like every one of my opponents. Right now, half the Congress are millionaires, but they pay lower taxes than firefighters and teachers.
It's an effective pitch, though not quite all of his opponents are millionaires. But Boyle has a vulnerability in this race.
I am 100% pro-choice. Brendan Boyle, according to Planned Parenthood, has mixed position on reproductive rights.
That's Margolies whacking Boyle on abortion rights, as other candidates have. He has a mixed voting record, but says his thinking has evolved, and he now fully supports a woman's right to choose. Physician Valerie Arkush is a first-time candidate who doesn't play like a first-timer. She's raised more money than anybody else and put out early mail pieces attacking Boyle on abortion rights and Margolies on her past willingness to consider Social Security cuts. Arkush is an anesthesiologist who was a national leader in the push for health care reform. In a TV ad, she wears her white coat and says she'll bring a new approach.
And most importantly, I bring a commitment to solving problems. And that's what I'll do in Congress.
And as the only candidate who's never held elective office, she makes this pitch in debates.
I would point out that Congress is full of career politicians, and I don't think they seem to be getting a whole lot done these days.
Here's how the fourth candidate in the race answered that point.
Well, I see what Val means about experience being bad. I mean, I know when I go into an operating room, I don't want a career anesthesiologist. I want someone who dabbles in it from time to time.
That's State Senator Dalen Leach. He's done stand-up comedy and is a gifted communicator, reeling off funny lines in debates and producing hilarious videos. But he's also regarded as a hardworking and very liberal member of the Pennsylvania Senate. An open congressional seat is a rare prize in politics, and three of the four candidates are putting substantial money of their own in the drive to Election Day. Leach took out a home equity loan to drop $250,000 into the race. Arkush has loaned her campaign $700,000. And even Boyle, the guy who complains about running against millionaires, found $100,000 to put into his campaign. Margolies' campaign finances have become an issue in a different way. Leach has filed a formal complaint charging Margolies violated federal election law by spending money on her primary campaign that is supposed to be reserved for general election expenses.
She broke the law, not once, not an accidental bookkeeping thing where she went 50 bucks under, but she woke up every day and made a conscious decision, I'm going to break the law today, over and over and over again.
Margolies insists her books are good. The Federal Election Commission will review the complaint, but not before the election. Political pros say any of the four could win this primary, and given the Democrats' dominance of the district, that's pretty much a ticket to Congress. Mm-hmm. Now to the Pennsylvania legislature, where all the state House seats and half the state Senate districts are on the ballot, though only about half of the House members and a third of the Senate have even token opposition. But this year's election season started out with a bang when the Senate's majority party reckoned with a newcomer vowing to shake up the place. Pennsylvania Public Radio's Capitol Bureau reporter Mary Wilson has more.
Parachuting into politics. It's a tagline that might best describe what state lawmaker Scott Wagner is up to these days.
I understand. I just got parachuted in here really 4 weeks ago. I've been parachuted in. I have a lot to learn.
Wagner is the legislature's newest member. He arrived as an outsider in the Senate Republican caucus after he won a special election to finish out the term of a GOP senator who resigned for another job. When it comes to legislative politics, Wagner is the breakout story of the year so far. The York County businessman comes off as gruff, and he definitely was not the chosen one for his party, but he bucked the county's party elders and the governor and won the seat as a write-in candidate, despite the TV attack ads paid for by the Senate Republicans' campaign committee. I asked Wagner whether he's bitter toward his Republican colleagues after all that.
Bottom line is we beat him, so... Once you stab your opponent in the neck and they bleed to death, you know, you don't keep stabbing them.
Now, with Tuesday's primary nearly here, Wagner's up for election again. This time, he'll be competing to keep his seat for the next legislative term starting in 2015. After his showing in a special election, he's expected to win easily. But what remains to be seen is how a trucking and trash hauling company executive who campaigned against career politicians and the PA political machine will fare in the rather staid environment of the state Senate.
You have to come in diplomatically. I'm not coming in with, into the Capitol with grenades strapped all over my vest.
As far as how Wagner's colleagues will do in Tuesday's primary, here's what else is at stake. All House members are up for election in Tuesday's primary, but nearly half are unopposed. The 203-seat state House is likely to remain firmly in GOP control. The party has 111 seats, while the Democrats number 92. 15 of the 50 Senate seats are up for grabs, and Republicans control the chamber just 27 to 23. Democrats are holding out hope that they could pick up a couple seats and keep the majority party on edge. What's also unique about this election year is that new district boundaries will be taking effect. This happens every 10 years to reflect population shifts based on census data. Millions of Pennsylvania voters will find themselves in new districts, and it turns out some found out from incumbent lawmakers who sent newsletters, birthday messages, and robocalls to voters within the new district boundaries just about to take effect. And the money being used to do all that comes from the legislature, which is to say, your Pennsylvania taxpayer dollars.
Who knows how much money's involved here? We don't know.
Gene Stilp is a sort of professional activist whose obsession is legislative malfeasance. He's also a candidate for the House, running as a Democrat. Stilp says incumbents shouldn't be able to do this kind of voter outreach on the taxpayer's dime.
That's what they're doing. They're campaigning with this money. People are sitting in jail in the bonus case right now for using taxpayer money to campaign. This is the same thing.
Bonusgate, of course, is the catch-all term used for the rash of cases from 2007 through 2012 involving lawmakers charged and in some cases convicted of using legislative resources for political purposes. And there's certainly been no shortage of controversy this term. Among Philadelphia's legislative delegation, two lawmakers, State Senator Leanna Washington and State Representative J.P. Miranda, are seeking re-election while facing criminal corruption charges. Plus, four other state representatives were named in news accounts as having taken cash in a sting operation run by the state attorney general's office. And only one of the four faces an opponent in Tuesday's primary. In Harrisburg, I'm Mary Wilson.
We head now from Harrisburg to State College to hear how the Jerry Sandusky Penn State scandal might factor into this year's governor's race.
I don't approve how anybody handled it.
Not in the slightest at all, no.
WPSU's Keystone Crossroads reporter Kate Lau Schaffner takes this look ahead at how the scandal could haunt Governor Corbett's reelection campaign.
It's been 2.5 years since former Penn State assistant football coach Jerry Sandusky was first charged with the sexual abuse of children. At the time, the scandal was all over the news.
Very ugly sexual abuse charges against a former coach at a college football powerhouse, Penn State.
Now with Governor Tom Corbett up for re-election, analysts expect the Sandusky scandal to bubble up again on the campaign trail. I posed the question to Terry Madonna. He's a leading authority on Pennsylvania politics and runs the Center for Politics and Public Affairs at Franklin and Marshall College.
I don't think you can rule out not just
the Kathleen Kane Sandusky investigation report, but the prospects that we could have three former Penn State administrators on trial.
As Madonna mentioned, Attorney General Kathleen Kane, a Democrat, could release a report on how Corbett handled the Sandusky investigation from back when he was the state's top prosecutor. He also points out Penn State officials Gary Schultz, Tim Curley, and former President Graham Spanier have been charged with covering up Sandusky's crimes. It's now just a matter of whether they're brought to trial before November's election.
There is no doubt this has caught the ire, if you will, of many, many Penn State alums and Penn State football fans. I do think there's still a lot of pushback and fallout against Corbett on all of the ramifications of the Penn State situation.
Madonna says many Penn Staters around the Commonwealth haven't forgotten Corbett's involvement as Attorney General, but also as a Penn State trustee, specifically his role in the board's decision to dismiss Joe Paterno. And Corbett has been criticized for playing politics in the investigation. One criticism is the idea that he intentionally stalled Sandusky's arrest until after he was elected governor to avoid political fallout. Another is his now-dismissed lawsuit against the NCAA, in which he objected to its sanctions against Penn State. But there's also the argument that the politicization of the Sandusky scandal goes both ways.
I'm pretty sure Attorney General Kane is going to issue her report at an appropriate moment.
That's Republican Bob Guzzardi. He was on the ballot to challenge Corbett in the primary, but the state Supreme Court ultimately dismissed him from the ballot for failing to properly meet a filing deadline for financial disclosures. Guzzardi thinks Kane might be waiting to release her report when it's politically expedient. Governor Corbett wasn't available for an interview, and his campaign manager, Mike Barley, says he has no comment on the political implications around the timing of Attorney General Kane's report. Barley says it's time for everyone to move on.
We owe it to everyone to continue to move forward and embrace the future of Penn State.
Are Pennsylvania voters ready to move on? Consider this. Every alumni-elected trustee who sat on the Penn State board during the fallout of the Sandusky scandal has since been replaced. For WPSU, I'm Kate Lau-Schaffner.
We're going to conclude our program by looking at what voters in the state's most high-profile race, that Democratic gubernatorial primary, should consider on Tuesday. We turn to one of the state's most respected political analysts, a veteran Capitol correspondent known for his breadth of knowledge and level-headed thinking. John Misek is the editorial and opinions editor for Penn Live and the Patriot News in central Pennsylvania. We should add that the Patriot News has endorsed Tom Wolf in the Democratic primary. John Misek, welcome.
Hi, Dave.
You've covered the Capitol a long time. You've seen people who are effective in state government. Is there a particular kind of experience or a set of leadership qualities you think we should look for in a governor?
Picking a governor is a deeply personal choice. You look at the man or woman who is running. We don't know who it's going to be yet coming out of this primary. And they resonate with you in some way. It might be something reassuring in their character. It might be a policy stance that they take. It might be a scrap that they've gotten into on the campaign trail that's proved their mettle as a candidate. So there are different skill sets for every candidate. And ideally, I'd love to see somebody who would be an amalgamation, who knows how to sell, who knows how to negotiate, who can be a powerful leader in a time of crisis. And it's hard to nail down what that intangible is of leadership, but you sort of know it when you see it, I think.
When you look at these candidates, Tom Wolf, Rob McCord, Allison Schwartz, Katie McGinty, give us a sense of what personal experience and leadership qualities strike you.
With Wolf, it seems to be a personality thing. And there's something calm and reassuring, I think, about Wolf that gets to people. And it's been underscored by those fantastic ads that Sol Shore did for him where he's tooling around the countryside in his Jeep. McCord, if there is an heir apparent to Ed Rendell in this race, I think it's Rob McCord. He has the fire. He has sort of the consummate retail politician, gregarious almost to a fault. Schwartz, somebody who's been in and around politics for, 30 years, probably 25 years. Very focused, very polished. In fact, I don't think I saw a single moment in this entire campaign where she wavered from message. Katie McGinty, something really bright-eyed and passionate about her. not spoiled by the process yet, even though she spent time in Ed Rendell's administration as DEP secretary and was an aide in the Clinton White House. She really has that kind of cliche to say that, but that Irish affability that you see in certain kinds of candidates.
All political ads are spin, of course. Do you think voters should even look at them?
Like it or not, people form their impressions based on what they see on TV. Should they make their minds up solely on television commercials? Surely not. But they do make an impression.
The most controversial ad was Rob McCord's attack on Tom Wolfe on his association with a formerly racist official in York, Pennsylvania. Your impression of that ad?
That was disappointing. It smacked a little bit, I think, of late campaign desperation from the McCord campaign. But I really do think Mr. McCord overplayed his hand.
Let's look at the fall. What kind of campaign are we going to see between the Democratic nominee and Tom Corbett?
Torrents of money. Whoever the nominee is, he or she is going to have to raise scads of cash. I mean, you can't get around the fact that an incumbent governor is exceptionally difficult to displace in this state. Governor Corbett has been consistently named one of the most vulnerable incumbent governors in the country. So the question becomes is how badly National Republicans want to hold on to the seat. Does the Republican Governors Association come in with a ton of money? Do we start seeing prominent National Republicans coming in as surrogates for Governor Corbett? Or do we see late campaign where whomever the Democratic nominee is gallops out ahead and the National GOP decides, well, you know what, lost cause, sinking ship, and they cut and run. So it's going to be a really fascinating campaign.
If Tom Wolf is the nominee, do you think this will be a particularly negative campaign in the fall? I mean, Corbett has already issued mailers attacking Wolf.
The governor's already punching down, presuming that Tom Wolf is going to be the nominee. We've already seen a television commercial where he's taking a shot at him. The governor's going to be in the fight of his political life this fall, and I would be shocked if it was not an aggressive and tough one.
John, thanks.
Thank you, Dave.
John Micek is the editorial and opinions editor for Penn Live and the Patriot News in Central Pennsylvania. And that does it for today's statewide news special, Election 2014. Keep following us online and tune in over the next few days as we continue to bring you election-related stories and, of course, ongoing coverage this Tuesday when voters hit the polls. Special thanks to all our reporters who contributed to today's collaborative news special, along with WHYY engineers Al Banks and Charlie Kyer, who mixed the show, news directors Tim Lambert at WITF, Mark Newtbar at WESA, Emily Reddy at WPSU, Eugene Son here at WHYY, and Chris Cetullo, WHYY's Vice President for News and Civic Dialogue. Our Election 2014 producer is WHYY's Stephanie Marudas. And I'm WHYY's senior reporter, Dave Davies. Thanks for joining us.